Senator Javits, would you exercise stricter controls over the Central Intelligence Agency? And do you blame the Johnson administration for not having done so?
I think the answer to both is yes, and I think Congress ought to exercise stricter controls, too. It's high time.
Face the Nation, a spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Senator Jacob Javits, Republican of New York. Senator Javits will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace, Nick Timmish of Time Magazine, and CBS News correspondent Martin Agronsky.
Senator Javits, you call for stricter congressional controls of the CIA. The CIA has continually rejected this, and one administration after another, including Republican administrations, has backed up the rejection on the grounds that national security would be involved if such controls were exercised by the Congress. How would you answer that?
Well, there's national security, Martin, and at least three committees that I can tick off in my head, and they're probably at least double that. One is the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy. I can't think of any more national security. The other is the Appropriations Committee, on which I serve in the Senate. Everything gets in there, whether it's atomic energy or secret weapons or strategy or anything else. And then we've got all kinds of secret things going through finance, going through foreign relations. I think any of these committees would be very angry if you told them they weren't handling things as secretly as the CIA. Now, there is some kind of a supervisory committee, allegedly, for the CIA, composed of sort of an informal subcommittee of a number of other committees, appropriations, armed services, foreign relations, but it doesn't seem to have been doing the job that needs to be done, which is a job of legislative oversight. And I'd like to tell the country, in terms of secrecy, let us remember that the Manhattan Project, the atomic bomb in World War II, was considered by congressional committees, and it was probably the best-kept secret of that or any other war. In short, it is not necessarily true that you can't trust the Congress. You may have to take precautions, and any one of us is just as subject to prosecution for treason or anything else as any other citizen. If you can trust an Army officer or the head of the CIA, you've got to trust some members of the Congress. Now, what's the real trouble here? The real trouble is that things that should have been opened were clandestine. It's a foot-and-mouth operation with the CIA. There's no reason why we can't finance a student who wants to go to a foreign convention or a foreign meeting any more than there's any reason why we can't finance a Fulbright scholar who goes abroad to study. And that goes for trade unions or anybody else. What's so secret about it? That's the virtue of our society. And the danger of it is that we allowed the CIA to operate with lots of money secretly in this country, which was not their job. Now, when they're permitted to do that, who knows what they can do? Maybe they're financing CBS or NBC or ABC or somebody else. Who knows? In short, you put the public in the kind of doubt which should never arise. Now, I know that isn't so. You know it isn't, and the country does. We know that this is
kind of... You mean about CBS?
Yeah. We know this is kind of a specialized thing. No, I say it extremely, because I think America needs to be reassured. And the way to reassure it is to lay down tighter ground rules, to make public what should be public. We're no secrets about where our boys go, and we want them to go, any more than there is about where I go, to interview heads of state or anybody else. As a congressman, I account. And the fact that we should have a good congressional oversight. That means a joint committee of the Congress for oversight of the CIA and other intelligence functions.
Senator, you recently urged that we stop the bombing of North Vietnam with the exception of the supply routes, and you've ask that your party support you in this view. I wonder what kind of support you might get from senators and congressmen from the heartland of America, where people feel the war should be pursued even more vigorously.
Well, Nick, there is, I think, almost an even division in the country on pursuing the war more vigorously or pursuing it or de-escalating. I don't think I take my stand with either. I like to describe myself in this respect as not a hawk or a dove, but an owl. A cartoonist gave me that idea, and I think it's a good one. Now, let me tell you why. I think that, in the first place, I think I back the president in the fundamental commitment in Vietnam, now that we're in, whether I'd have gotten in or not if I were president. But now that we're in, I back that commitment. Let's have that crystal clear. The second point is that what I recommended is a way in which to deal with the problem of trying to bring about a peace. I think the American people, by a big majority, want a peace. They want it with honor. They want to have achieved something. And we've already achieved a great deal in the stability and security of South and Southeast Asia, in my judgment, including the turnover in Indonesia, which I think is heavily attributable to what we've done in Vietnam. But I think the American people want a package to settle the thing. Now, you've tried to define what I said. Let me do it myself, because it is a package. In the first place, I said, either confine the bombing to the direct access routes, as you did before August 1966, or declare that you're ceasing the bombing unconditionally. But you're going to watch what they do with it. And if we think they're infiltrating men and materials in such a way as to be materially damaging to our forces, the clear implication in my proposition is that we have the right to resume the bombing. You've tried to define what I said. Let me do it myself, because it is a package. In the first place, I said, either confine the bombing to the direct access routes, as you did before August 1966, or declare that you're ceasing the bombing unconditionally. But you're going to watch what they do with it. And if we think they're infiltrating men and materials in such a way as to be materially damaging to our forces, the clear implication in my proposition is that we have the right to resume the bombing, to wit, an unconditional cessation of the bombing. In addition, I've urged two other points: recognition of the Viet Cong as a negotiating party, and the fact that they will have a right to vote and perhaps gain public office if they're elected, like any other person in South Vietnam. And the third thing is that there's got to be a good tight guarantee of what's done this time, so we don't have a repetition of this deal, and the Soviet Union has to be a party to that guarantee. Now, that's a package which I think can get us out of this dilemma in South Vietnam.
Senator Chavez, Richard Nixon has predicted a wide-open convention, Republican convention in 1968, with three or more candidates and several ballots before the decision is made. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I don't. I believe that we're going to go to the convention. And incidentally, this isn't invidious to Mr. Nixon any more than he's invidious to me if he disagrees with me. I don't think it's going to be that kind of a convention. I think what's going to happen in 68 is that the progressives and moderates in the party are going to do what they didn't do in 64, get behind a candidate early. And therefore, you're going to go to the convention as we did in 1952 with a progressive and moderate candidate. In 1952, it was Eisenhower, and a conservative candidate in 1952, it was Taft. This time, it may very well be Romney and Nixon, or it may be some other combination. But very definitely, it will be an open convention in the sense that anybody can win. But the lineup, in my judgment, will be not as it was in 64, but as it was in 52.
Well, have they already begun to do that?
Well, we're trying. As you know, well, when I say we, you know very well that I'm on the progressive and moderate side, and that includes a great many governors, a great many senators. It would be a fairly long list, but I think the public knows these people very well.
Well, who are the leading ones, and what are you doing?
Well, when you say the leading ones, immediately you exclude a lot of people. So let me just pick a sample of people of that kind. One would put in the progressive and moderate category, I'm sure. Rockefeller of New York, Schaefer of Pennsylvania, Love of Colorado, Chafee of Rhode Island, Volpe of Massachusetts, and so on, Agnew of Maryland, etc. There are quite a list. Now, on the Senate side, let us say, and of course there are a good many House members, you'd be dealing with people like myself, with Cooper, with Brook, with Percy, with Hatfield, with Case, and so on. Again, quite a long list, in which I would incidentally include Senator Aiken of Vermont, our dean, Mrs. Smith, and so on. But again, they may not like that idea, but that's the general way the public looks at it. Now, what are we doing? I think we're, by discussion, by backing up the front runner right now in the best way we can, without crystallizing and saying he's it as far as we're concerned. Who is Romney at the moment, by looking into other possibilities, by developing ideas, research, etc., trying to get to the point where we can crystallize behind a candidate.
Senator, you made a very interesting observation. You included Rockefeller, who has rigorously excluded himself. Do you know something that we don't know or that he doesn't know?
Well, I think Rockefeller knows exactly, and I know exactly, and even you do, because I included Rockefeller as one of those leaders of the party in the progressive and moderate camp who would get behind, quote, get behind a candidate who would be the leading candidate of the progressives and moderates for the presidency. Therefore, I expressly excluded, rather than included, Rockefeller in the class which you're trying to put him in.
Well, let's include him. What do you think of Rockefeller being the nominee in 68?
Rockefeller has declared expressly and specifically to the people of New York in connection with his election that he's taking himself out of the national picture. He's my friend, and he's a man of his word, and I can't include him for that reason. He's excluded himself completely.
Your name does come up frequently, though Principally, I think that you'll agree among the moderate to liberal people in the Republican Party as a potential running mate for George Romney. The question is, what would Jacob Javits add to a Romney ticket that would make him attractive, let's say, to people in the southern part of the Republican Party?
Mike, some time ago I appeared on a television show and got in a lot of trouble because I used the word entitled in answer to a question. When I was asked, why did I think I rated in the sweepstakes? And I said, I thought I did. It was almost a matter of self-respect, having been at it for 20 years. So I won't try to get into that one again, because I'm sorry, that didn't work out so well as far as I was concerned. But let me say this to you. What could I add? I'm not selling myself on this proposition. Let's make it very simple. I'm supposed to stand well in New York. And I'm supposed to be a person the people of New York like and back, taking a majority. And I've been successful here in many elections, and I think I bespeak the voice of New York. So let's say only that I feel, in all sincerity and decency, what New York is in terms of the nation, and I think that the other states have many similar problems, other industrial states, and so on. Now, that doesn't mean I put myself forward or I think anybody owes me any nomination or anything else. It only explains. I'm being very careful about this for the reason I told you. It only explains why my name is being discussed. And I wish to add that that's fine, I'm glad to have it discussed, but the realities of my situation indicate that it is most likely that I shall be running for re-election to the Senate. But I do like to have my name discussed for one very big reason. It gives me an opportunity to develop and put forward ideas which are being listened to more than ever because my name is discussed in this national context. So, as I've always been passionate for ideas in my party and in the country, this is entirely gratifying to me. Now, that's Senator, the whole explanation of my situation as I see it.
Senator, when are you going to announce for re-election?
Well, I think there comes an appropriate moment for that. It's rather early now, but I don't exclude any the possibility of such announcement at any time from now on.
Do you see any opposition in your own party to your nomination?
Well, I think there's always opposition to everything in the party and by the Democrats and by the Conservative Party and perhaps by the Liberal Party. I have no idea as to how they'll go. I expect lots of opposition. I think New York is going to be a very important race, and I'll tell you why. I think that the way the president's running in the polls, and the polls are, they're not conclusive, but they're indicative of some sentiment in the country, New York becomes critically important. This is the big bunch of electoral votes. If Richard Nixon had had them in 1960, he'd have won. Lyndon Johnson, if he's going to be the candidate, and I have no doubt he is, has got to have this block of New York votes, and there's going to be a very big effort here. And New York's a state that could go either way, as we all know. So, and I shall be, if I run for the Senate, the head of the ticket here in New York. And so this is going to be pretty important stuff.
Senator, while most Republicans, virtually all Republicans, are talking unity around the country, you continue to stir the embers of 1964. I listened to you with some, I gather, off-the-cuff remarks at the Lincoln Day dinner here in New York, and then you elaborated on them to some extent up in Utica, New York. You continue to evoke the threat of the far right in the Republican Party. You also said that you didn't think that Richard Nixon is a proper candidate for 1968, because he's trying to please both the conservatives and the progressives in the party, and I think you said the experience of 64 shows that you've got to fight it out. You seem to be out of step with the mood of the Republican Party on that score.
Well, I don't think I am, because I don't think that I'm stirring up the embers of disunity, and I don't wish to do that. And if your question is a correction, I accept it. What I wish to do is to evoke the image of our greatest failure so that we may learn from it. And you cannot have unity at the cost of a loss of conscience. You cannot deviate so far from the fundamental tenets of my party in terms, let us say, of civil rights and equal opportunity, in terms of the paramountcy of the civilian over the military, essentially ingrained in the Lincolnian party, which is before the American people, and then expect to get unity on that just because a majority at the convention nominated that kind of a candidate. There comes a point where conscience comes in. So I remind them, but let me finish the answer. I remind the party what we suffered because of this artificial attempt to induce unity, notwithstanding conscience, and thereby invoke in the party the clear desire to avoid that terrible disaster which we suffered in 64. Now, as far as former Vice President Nixon is concerned, I deprecate any possibility that he may move in that direction. But he, in my judgment, he has not yet done so. And I don't consider Vice President Nixon as anything so far but a conservative candidate. He seems to be taking on that coloration, which is rather different from 60. But certainly within the context of the party, I'm not quarreling with Richard Nixon in any way, like I quarreled with Senator Goldwater. I don't want you to get that impression. What I have said is that I think it would be desirable, because I think we have a chance to win in 68 if we have new faces, and perhaps even new old faces in the sense of being on the national scene and in the national ticket.
Well, Senator, if you feel so strongly about this, would you here and now say that you could not support Ronald Reagan in California?
I would not do any such thing, because we still don't know what Mr. Reagan stands for in total context, if he were a and if he is a presidential candidate. And it would be quite gratuitous. And
well,
if
he's
I did
announced
that,
himself as a presidential candidate.
Well, he's announced himself as a favorite son candidate for
willing to accept the nomination.
For his own I don't feel that his announcement is of a character that requires me to take a position on him. All I'm saying right now is that as far as the progressives and moderates are concerned, the front runner is George Romney. Right now, we've got to give him the best hand we can in the hope that this will crystallize the progressive and moderate sentiment.
And if he falters, Senator Javits, who on the progressive side would you imagine is second in line?
I don't know yet. But I think in the course of doing what we're doing with Romney, we'll find out.
Charles Percy?
I have any idea.
How would you evaluate what Governor Reagan...
Incidentally, I don't want to sound invidious to Senator Percy. Remember, he's very new. You know, I used a racing analogy the other day in a show, which you'll go unnamed on this program, in which I said you don't run them before they're 2 years old, and you rarely run them after they're six or seven. And I think that, you know, it sounds sporting, but there's a lot of truth to it as far as our 1968 picture is concerned.
Well, that would seem to point again to Nelson Rockefeller for the progressives.
Not necessarily, especially as Mr. Rockefeller, as I said before, has taken himself out of it. Governor Rockefeller has taken himself out of it completely for very good reasons for himself and the people of the state of New York. And I think he's very sincere in what he said and done. And I think it would be very insulting to him if I challenged that by making light of it and saying, oh, sure, maybe, and so on.
Senator, can we go back to Governor Reagan
sure.
again for a second? What do you think of his performance until now? You're a political professional. You know how to make
sense. Well, I could avoid that question, Martin, by saying he's the governor of California. I'm the senator from New York. He's a fellow Republican, belongs in the party just as much as I do. Let me emphasize that, and I feel that way. And therefore, why should I say anything about him? But that would be avoiding. All that I will say is this. The colorations of his policy have seemed to me more conservative than is desirable as far as the presidency of the United States is concerned on the Republican ticket in terms of his brush with the higher educational situation in the state, which I must say disturbs me even less than his attitude on equal opportunity and civil rights and the need for federal and state law to assure equal opportunity and civil rights, etc. But he's brand new. And he is maturing and developing, and we don't know what direction that will take. You take the senator from California, Senator Murphy, who is also a conservative man, and yet in the Senate has shown certain elements of usefulness, of constructive application of his views, which have given many of us a somewhat different slant on him than we thought when he got there. The same may be true of Governor Reagan. So I don't think I've given you my assessment to date, but I would not wish to make that final and conclusive as yet.
You Senator, let's go to him to Goldwater.
I would not. And I emphasize that because I think there you had a crystallized issue of conscience for people like myself, and I've given you two examples of it. I mean, for example, a callousness toward the implications of the John Birch Society, which in my judgment was evidenced in that case. Now, these are very deep things. The paramountcy of the military over the civilian, which crept through the whole operation. The opposition to federal civil rights laws. And federal civil rights action, notwithstanding that Senator Goldwater is without any question perfectly good on personal relations with Negroes. There's a trace of bias in him, I'm sure of that. But that doesn't make it or break it in terms of a candidacy and of people who have political decisions to make.
Well, as long as you brought up Senator Goldwater here, what would you say his role is now in the Republican Party?
I think he's a former candidate for president, has a very important role in the party, and a great many followers. As a matter of fact, the rumors are that right now he's got more delegates that he can suggest what to do in 1968 than anybody else. This doesn't scare me, because I think delegates, just like other people, including Supreme Court judges, read what's going on in the world. And I think if we mount a sufficient effort and show that this is not the right way to go, delegates won't go that way. But Senator Goldwater is a very influential man in our party.
You wouldn't read him out of the party, then?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. As I've said many times, I repeat, the party should contain Senator Goldwater, Governor Reagan, other conservatives or ultra-conservatives, as well as me. That's the whole genius of the two-party system.
What is a conservative? What's an authentic conservative?
Well, I've tried to define that. It's an authentic conservative, I would say, is a man who believes... Really, if you boil it down to the way the people really look at it, an authentic conservative would be a man who would rather see something not done, even though it's humanitarianly desirable, if he thinks the means by which it's going to be done are unwise in terms of freedom. That's really the essence of their objections, you know, to basic welfare things, etc. They say it's better. They're good people. They're not indecent human beings. They have hearts just like yours and mine. But they say it's better for the government not to do it at all, even though it may mean suffering, if that, in our judgment, will compromise freedom. Now, my answer is that there is a way to do it which will not compromise freedom. And that's where we part.
Senator, talking about conservatives, the darling of a good group of the conservatives now would seem to be George Wallace of Alabama, who favored you in a speech last Friday night in New Orleans. He compared you with Hubert Humphrey and Lyndon Johnson, and... He took on Everett Dirksen and Richard Nixon, Robert Kennedy. You're all more or less the same, he says.
He did, not favorably, Mike. He spoke of us.
What would you think might be the impact of a George Wallace candidacy for president, which seems to be in the works now, upon such an election?
I think if we assumed that a Wallace candidacy would defeat the Democrats, we'd be out of our minds. I think a Wallace candidacy will get votes and may even get a few electoral votes, but I do not believe it will have a decisive effect upon the presidential election.
Who's it going to hurt, the Democrats or the Republicans more?
I couldn't tell you. In view of the history of the Republicans having carried just about only southern states in 1964, everything's up for grabs right now. I don't think you can take anything for granted. Therefore, I could not tell you. And I think it would also be important as to what kind of a candidate we nominated.
You've called on the Republican senator to be the party of peace. That's a fine, catchy slogan. How do you go about it?
Well, I've given the prescription that I think my party could usefully back in respect to Vietnam. I think the danger in my party is it will go for higher escalation, and we've heard some whisperings of that already, and therefore incur a grave danger of attracting communist China in, bearing in mind that Mao Zedong may need a diversion of that character in view of his internal troubles. You know, from the French Revolution on, external war has always been the answer to the dictator's troubles at home, and also cause a breach with the Russians, and it would, a higher escalation, which sets us back another 20 years and the possibility of doing something in Europe, which still remains the key place on Earth.
You want it ended as quickly as possible.
Well, thank you. I think I've had my say on that. I think what I'm trying to avoid is the danger in my party of escalation.
Today on Face the Nation, Senator Jacob Javits, Republican of New York, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace, Nick Timmish of Time magazine. CBS News correspondent Martin Agronsky led the questioning.
This program has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.